as you relax your body and your mind, find that part of yourself that can just simply appreciate the totality of your experience. You can appreciate your body. You can appreciate your emotions, your thoughts, and just the person in total that you are, with all of your experiences and all of the good things and the bad things, positives and negatives, all the experiences that you've had. Find that part of yourself that can be wondrous, appreciative, grateful. And let your body and mind relax in that attitude. See if you can extend that attitude of openness to all of the sensations, the sounds, the experiences that are filling the environment external to the body. So if you can let your awareness resolve or encompass all that you're experiencing at the moment without any tension or clinging or resistance. So the mind totally relaxes into the environment, and as it does that, the environment is totally pervaded by consciousness. Everything in my experience is in consciousness. My physical body, which is seated on the chair, located in this room, in this apartment, in Berkeley, this experience is in consciousness. I could say this experience is not away from consciousness. Or I could say this experience is not away from me. The body is not away from me. The sounds outside also are not away from me. This physical body is in consciousness. My sense of hearing is in consciousness. And the sounds that are heard are in consciousness. The hearing and the heard are in consciousness. The sense of touch is in consciousness, and whatever felt sensations I'm having are in consciousness. Let your mind relax just into your own being, into consciousness itself. Just let the mind relax, whatever thoughts or feelings it may be having, whatever images, don't worry about that, just let them be. But just notice, bring into the forefront you. The stable, conscious being that you are. The one for whom the body is known. The one for whom sounds are known. The silent presence. Let the mind simply relax into the silent presence of yourself. notice how self-shining you are. You are known to yourself not as an object, but you are the very light, the very conscious being, because of which all else is known. What is responsible for you being known? Let your own presence just come to the forefront. And give your mind an opportunity just to appreciate the wholeness of yourself. Notice how you aren't doing anything. You light up the mind, you light up the body, you light up the sense organs, and they don't touch you. Om Patram Karne Vishrinuyama Devaha Patram Pashe Makshapirya Chatraha Stirairam Gai Stushtu Vagum Sastanubihi Vyashema Deva Hitanya Dayuhu Swastina Indro Vrittashlavaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swasti nastarksho adishtanehi, swasti no brahaspatir tatatu. Om shanti shanti shanti. Verse 11. Natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. Natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. Nema vidyuto panti kuto yamagnihi. Nema vidyuto panti kuto yamagnihi. Tameva bhantam anupati sarvam. Tameva bhantam anupati sarvam. Tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhati. Tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhati. Na tatra suryaha bhati na chandra tarakam na ima na ima, I think it's na imaha vidyutaha bhanti kutaha ayam agnihi tam eva bhantam anupati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. This chant is always done at when you do a puja, at the end of the puja, when they're doing the arati, when they're taking the light, the little plate with the light, and going around like this, then we'll all be chanting this particular verse. So it's one that most of us know by heart. It says na tetra, not there, na not tetra there means in Brahman. That tra affix gives the locative sense. Not there. Suryaha bhati. The sun shines. The sun doesn't shine there. Suryaha bhati. Nabhati. The sun doesn't shine there. Na chandra tarakam. Nor the moon or the stars. Chandra tarakam. It's a dwandva. Chandra, moon, and stars. Nor the moon and the stars. They do not shine there. Na imaha vidyutaha bhanti, nor not these lightnings, no, lightning streaks, these do not shine there. Kutaha ayam agnihi, what to speak of this fire? Kutaha, what to say? Kutaha ayam agnihi, what to speak of this fire before us? That doesn't shine there either. So they're listening to all the luminaries. Tameva bhantam anupati sarvam. Everything, sarvam, anupati, shines after tam eva, that alone, tam eva, which is shining. Tameva bhantam, that alone, that thing alone, which that Brahman alone, which is shining. Everything shines after that. Everything shines after that Brahman alone. That Brahman, which is Bhantam, that Brahman, which is itself shining, everything else shines after that. Tasya bhasa, by the light of that, sarvam idam vibhati, by the light of that, all of this shines in its own way. Vibhati means it all shines in its own particular way. Right? So it's a really, this is such a famous verse. The Atma, yourself, is not an object in the creation, right, to be illumined by the sun. Right? So what's happened here, they've taken all the luminaries that we have available to us, right? So we've got the sun, we've got the moon, we've got the stars, right? We've got the fire that we look. So all these we've got the lightning. So these are the things, these are the luminaries that light up the world prior to electricity, right? Right? So it's what the creation has given us. The luminaries that the creation has given us. These luminaries light up objects in the world. These luminaries cannot light up the Atma. Right? They light up objects. Yeah. So the Atma, which itself is lit up, is not lit up by the sun or the stars or the moon or the lightnings or the Agni right before you. Right? So what is lighting up this sun, the self? Because these luminaries don't reach there. These luminaries don't go there. Then he says, in fact, all of these luminaries, Sarvam, all of these luminaries shine after that Atma. Because of that Atma, because that Brahman is shining, all of these luminaries shine. Then it says, in fact, by the light of that luminary, of Brahman, by the light of that Brahman, all of this is manifest. All of this vibhati, all of this is known. Okay. So this verse is complete. You know, there's it's an incredible verse. So let me get into it a little bit. Last week we touched on it just lightly. Without these luminaries, illumining objects, my eyes can't see the objects. But without my eyes, the luminaries themselves can't be seen. You see? The luminaries light up the objects that allow me to see them. But without my eyes, the luminaries themselves aren't known. And so the luminaries, together with the objects that they illumine, are dependent upon my eyes in order for them to be known. So through the light of my eyes, the sun and the stars and the moon and all of the objects they illumine are known. You see how that goes? Because if I don't have the eyes there, they're not going to be known. So they're dependent for their shining, for their manifestation, on my eyes. But now my eyes also are dependent on my mind in order for the eyes themselves to shine. In other words, in order for my eyes to light up these luminaries, my mind needs to be lighting up my eyes. Because if my eyes are focused on the luminaries and my mind is daydreaming, once again the luminaries aren't lit up, nor are the objects. So now, again, the eyes themselves become dependent on the mind, the luminosity of the mind, to light up the eyes. That's why, in fact, the conscious mind illumines the eyes as well as what the eyes light up. Right? It's very interesting. Without the eyes, without the conscious mind, the eyes themselves are not lit up, and so they can't themselves light up these objects, the luminaries. But the mind that lights up the eyes, that light up the objects, is aware of both the eyes and the objects that the eyes see. So from the standpoint of the mind, the eyes and the luminaries are known. That's why you can say, you know, as you are looking at whatever your eyes are focused on, you can say, I'm aware of my eyes. I'm aware of the knowership of my eyes. I'm aware of how my eyes are functioning, and I'm aware of what my eyes are seeing. So not only are the luminaries and the objects that the luminaries light up included in the luminosity of the mind, but the eyes that light them up are also included. Now this is true also with the ears. The mind lights up the ears as well as what the ears hear. Sense of touch. It lights up the sense of touch as well as what the sense of touch, its sphere, right? Same with the sense of taste. Same with the sense of smell. So in fact, though we identify so thoroughly with ourselves as a knower, I am a seer, I am a hearer. In fact, just even from the standpoint of my mind, I illumine the hearer and the heard. Right? The conscious mind illumines the seer and the seen. So even from the standpoint of the mind, seer, seen, subject, object are both in consciousness. You see that? Hear or heard. See or seen. Taste or tasted. The mind illumines both. If the mind is to pull away and be off thinking about its own thing or daydreaming, then neither are the sense organs known or their sphere. Neither the eyes as seen are known, nor what they see. All are gone. And so the sense organs and the luminaries depend now on the illumination of the mind. Without the presence of the mind, these things are unknown. But then the mind also is not ultimately the luminary. Because the mind itself needs to be illumined. If the mind isn't illumined, it itself is not known. And not only that, your mind can go into deep sleep. When the mind goes into deep sleep, right, at that time there's no luminosity of the mind. So if the mind itself contained the luminosity, when it went into deep sleep, then it would be luminous in deep sleep. It's not. When the mind goes into deep sleep, it's in an unmanifest condition. There is no luminosity of the mind at that time. And also the mind requires knowership, right? The mind requires to be known. And so the luminosity, that which illumines the mind, is not moving with the mind. The light that illumines the mind remains steady. And so the mind, the luminosity that the mind enjoys, also is in a sense once removed. Because there's knower known. There's subject-object relationship there. And so then when we try to get back to, okay, what is it that is really lighting up this world? Ultimately, what lights up the world? Right? So it starts out with all of these luminaries, these five luminaries, light up the world. No. Your eyes need to light up those luminaries even for them to be known. Well, your mind needs to light up the eyes in order for them to be known. No, consciousness needs to light up the mind in order for it to be known. What lights up consciousness? The consciousness, the conscious being that you are, which is the one because of whom the mind is known, and then the mind knows the sense organs, illumines the sense organs, and the sense organs illumine the luminaries, and the luminaries light up the world. What lights up the consciousness? Can we go further so that we can say, well, now there's a consciousness that needs to light up the consciousness. Right? There is a consciousness to light up the consciousness. Is there any such thing? And we say, no. The consciousness itself is tum bhantam. That itself is luminous, right? So all of this, the luminaries, the objects of illumination, the sense organs and the mind, all of these luminaries, because the sense organs become a luminary, because of the sense organs, the luminaries are known. The mind becomes a luminary. Because of the mind, the sense organs are known and functioning. The mind becomes a luminary. They're all lit up. They're all known. They're not lit by themselves. They don't have light of their own. If they had light of their own, then whether the mind was off daydreaming or not, the sense organs would be luminous. If the sun and the and the stars had luminosity of their known of their own, they would be known in their own light. But they're not. They require illumination in order to be known. And without that illumination, without that focus, then they become inert, unknown. Now we take it all the way back to consciousness. Does consciousness need attention? My mind requires, my eyes require the attention of my mind. The sun requires the attention of my eyes in order for them to be known. Does consciousness require attention? Does it require focus? Does somebody have to be illumining it in some way? We say no. That's what we mean by the conscious being that you are is self-evident. Nothing is lighting it up. But because of you, the mind is lit up. Because of you, the sense organs are lit up. It's not that the mind lights up you. Right? And so when we did a little bit in the guided meditation. When you're sitting with yourself and objectifying all of these things, and what you're left with, you just recognize just your own being, the conscious being that you are. You ask yourself, let the mind ask, am I lighting this up or am I being lit up? Like, say you ask this question. You're sitting in meditation, all relaxed, everything's fine. Now your mind asks, am I lighting the me? Am I lighting this up? And you just think, am I lighting this up? And you ask, well, is this thought, am I lighting this up, lit up? Is it known? Yes. Does this thought, is this thought required? Is any thought required in order for me to be? Is there a relationship? Is there a subject-object relationship where the mind is turning around and looking at me? Do I require the mind? You just ask yourself and see. Then see, okay, say I require the mind. Then try to make the mind know me. Who's knowing who? Where's the subject located? Where's the me located? And what you'll find is the mind is ephemeral. Ephemeral in the sense that it's one thought after another. It's coming from this direction and that direction. But with the ephemeral mind, whether it's looking or not looking, whether it's daydreaming or perceiving, all of that is taking place in a self that is absolutely changeless and absolutely luminous. Luminous in the sense that it is known. It is known without a knower. And can you see that? Consciousness is known without a knower. And if you see that, if you say consciousness is known, this me is known without a knower, why I say that is because who's going to know it? Who's going to know it? Is there something else that has to come in to know it? Like an example they use is, you say, among the luminaries, the sun is lighting up, you know, the whole day. The sun is lighting up the day. Everything in its vicinity. But now we ask, but who's going to light up the sun? Do we need to bring in another sun to light up the sun? So the sun can be lit. The sun's lighting everything else. Do we have to bring in another sun to light it up? We say no. The sun is its own luminosity. So here, then if we take it like that, say, okay, the sun doesn't need another sun to light itself up. It lights up everything else and it lights up itself also. What about me? Do I need to bring in anything to give me the self-experience of myself? Does anything contribute to it? And we say, no. This is tum bhantam. It itself is self-shining. And because of this, everything else, because of the self that I am, everything else is known. No. When you say that, because of this, the Atma, the self that I am, everything else is known, where does the experience of known reside? So let's look at this just in terms of the experience that you're having through your sense organs right now. Do you notice that everything in this room is known? Just as an object, as a perception. The entire room is known. The rug is known. The space is known. The lamp is known. The wall is known. Every object is known. Okay. So now if you just sit quietly and notice, what we actually have here are a panorama of names and forms that are coming into your mind through your eyes. Okay. Clear for everybody? Now notice that we say, everything, this entire experience that I'm having through my eyes, is known. It is known. Now I'm asking, can you differentiate the experience of being known from the objects? You say, these objects are all known. Actually, the experience of being known doesn't belong to the objects. The experience of being known is the nature of the self. Okay, so now, for you have your eyes open right now, just notice that when you say everything is known, okay? Everything is known, but you're seeing through your eyes. It's all known. Now, everybody close your eyes just for a minute. And now, notice just the nature of consciousness, of your being, of your own presence. It is known. You are known. You might be noticing the body is known. But your being is known. Now, holding on to that known experience, which just really is consciousness, now open your eyes. There's been no shift at all in the knownness of consciousness. There's no objectification of it at all. So, in reality, what we have here is all of this, these names and forms that are enjoying non-objectifiable knownness. Non-objectifiable existence. Let me do it another way. You might need a more guided meditation to really get this. But okay, say, now, all of these objects exist. You just assume that, right? It is, it is, it is, it is. We give existence, the experience of existence is given to all of this, everything that we're perceiving right now. But where does the experience of existence reside? Is it something that you're looking at? No. You can't say, oh, look at the existence over there. You superimpose the experience of existence on what you're seeing, because what you're seeing, everything that you're experiencing, is not away from existence. But existence is not an object. It is your being. Your experience of existence just is your being. That's the sat, what we call sat-chit. The experience of existence and the experience of consciousness are one and the same. And so now I can, as I have my eyes open now, I can say in this experience, everything is known and everything exists equally. Right? The space exists equally to the painting, exists equally to the lamp. To absolutely everything in this experience, there's a unified isness. All the nama-rupas are different. But we wouldn't say that one thing is more existent than another. Right? We'd say one thing is different than another, not one thing is more existent than another. Now this is true also for your thoughts. A happy thought is not more existent than a sad thought. A happy thought is different than a sad thought. But the being that they enjoy is this exactly the same. It never varies at all. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. What varies is the quality of the experience, but not the being of it, not the knownness of it. Right? The being and the knownness is the same for all experience. And you can't objectify either one. You can't say, oh, look at the knownness. Look at the consciousness. No, you say, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. I am known. You can't say, look at the isness. You can say, it is, 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 it is. But you can't say, look at the isness. Okay? So what is actually happening is that the being that you are is superimposed. You superimpose it because of ignorance. That the isness which you are superimposed onto this world, and then you say it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. But if you got rid of the whole universe, what would be left is it is. If you got rid of every name and form, what would be left is it is. But we would say it as I am. Because there is no difference between I am and it is. The isness that the sat is called I am in reference to the body, and it is in reference to everything else. I am in reference to, because of adhyasa, because of this superimposition. But my being is not, the existence experience is not objectifiable. Okay, so now, here we have our eyes open. Everybody recognizes that everything that you perceive, you give existence to. That means it all has the experience of existence. It all is. You are. It is. Right? Including this body, everything. So now just shut your eyes for a minute. And notice the experience of being. Now just holding on to that experience of being, I am-ness. Notice that when you open your eyes, it's exactly the same. There's no shift at all. There's no way to distinguish or move the beingness which you are. It's the beingness which you are that is the beingness of all this. There's only one beingness, and that beingness is knownness, is consciousness. Why do I say knownness? Because we use the word known when we say, this is known, 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 the body is known, the mind is known, the sense organs are known. I am known. So what is that known? I'm saying that known is the self-evident nature of your being. And that self-evident nature then is superimposed on the whole creation. And then things gain a reality that is dual. There's a dvaita comes into being. Because this has its existence, and this has its existence, and this has its existence. See how many things have existence? That's more than one. But actually, there's only one existence, which is non-objectifiable. And that one existence is the being because of which all of this is. So there's one existence which manifests in this way. One non-dual, non-objectifiable existence that manifests with Maya, because of Maya, in this way. So that everything in the universe, the whole infinite jagat, the infinite creation, right, is known, is known, is known, is known, is known. That's Ishvara, omniscience. The entire infinite creation is known. The entire infinite creation is. It is and it is known. Because again, the entire infinite creation, same superimposition. Just like there's a superimposition here. It is and it is known. The infinite creation has exactly the same superimposition. It is and it is known. The isness is the Atma. The is-knownness is the Atma. So you, Tathamasi, that's the whole Mahavakya. The being that you are, the conscious being that you are, is the being which is superimposed on the infinite creation and superimposed on every part of the infinite creation. So here you as a jiva are part and parcel of this manifest creation. And within this manifest creation, you as a jiva are walking around with your limited mind, which has the same, enjoys the same phenomena. The same phenomena is Ishvara. Right? Ishvara is the infinite manifestation of infinite knowledge, the whole entire jagat. It enjoys is-known, the is-known of the Atma, the existence of the Atma, the is-known of the Atma, the superimposition, and Dhyasa is there also. Your mind, same thing. That non-objectifiable self, the conscious being that I am, is superimposed on the mind. Right? So the mind is known, and then that mind uses the sense organs, and the isness and is known is superimposed on the sense organs. And then the sense organs perceive the objects, and the is and is known is then superimposed on these objects. But the being that you are is never changing, is never objectifiable. It is its own experience. It's what we call self-evident, self-luminous. There's nothing that lights it up. Because of it, everything is lit up. So here it says, Natatra Suryo Bhati, not the sun doesn't shine there. The sun doesn't illuminate. Neither does the moon or the stars. these lightnings don't illuminate. What to speak of this fire? You can imagine them sitting around the campfire, right? So what to speak of this fire? Tameva bhantam anupati sarvam. Everything shines after that alone. That of tam eva, which itself is shining. Everything, all of this, shines after that alone, which is the bhantam, which is the luminary. So if that means you, you, Brahman, you are the luminary. You are the conscious being, because of which all of these things shine. Tasya bhasa, by the light of that atma, all of these things are manifest. All of these things shine. So let's do the next verse that comes together. Pramai vedam amritam purastat. Pramai vedam amritam purastat. Brahma paschat. Brahma dakshinatas chotarena. Brahma dakshinatas chotarena. Adaschordvam. Cha prasratam. Pramaiva vedam. Vishwamidam varishtam. Brahma eva idam amritam. Brahma eva idam amritam prasthat. Brahma paschat. Brahma dakshinataha. Cha utarena. Adaha cha. Urdhvam cha prasritam. Brahma eva idam vishwam idam varishtam. This is the concluding verse of this section. And it sums up everything that's been unfolded in this section, in this little chapter. It says, Brahma eva idam amritam. Brahman alone, Brahma eva idam, Brahman alone is this. Brahman, which is amritam, changeless, free from death, immortal. The Brahman, the conscious being that you are, which is amritam, Brahman alone is idam, is this. Everything that you experience, Brahman alone, Brahman is this. It's like saying, you're saying is, yourself is this. Yourself alone is all of this. Yourself, which is Brahman, which is the conscious existent being, which is non-objectifiable, it's a limited object. Yourself, that Brahman, is all of this. He says, Purastat. Purastat Brahma. All of this that you see in front of you, and you take to be different, subject, I'm the subject, and you're the object. No. All of this in front of you, everything that you see here in front of you, that is Brahman. Then, paschat Brahma. And everything behind you, that is Brahman. Dakshinataha. Everything that is to your left. There's other words for dakshina. We can do north, south, but how Shankara takes it is in this way, front and back, and then dakshina becomes left. Everything to your left is Brahman.
Right.
Everything to your right is... you're right, Edward, sorry. Dakshina. Everything to your right is Brahman. I'm used to dakshina meaning south. Everything to your left, uttara. Everything to your left also is Brahman. Adascha, everything below. Urdhvamcha, everything above is Brahman. Prasritam Brahma, everything that spreads out before you in every direction, all of the nama-rupas, all of the names and forms that you perceive, all of this that you perceive is Brahman alone. Brahma eva idam vishwam. Brahman alone is this entire creation. Now by the word vishwam, what they mean by vishwam, every single experience that's available, whether it be on a subtle level or on a physical level, that is vishwam. So the whole jagat of every experience that's available in the entire creation is vishwam. So Brahman alone, idam vishwam, is this vishwam. Idam varishtam. And this is varishtam, the most exalted. There's nothing more. There is nothing greater than this. All of this is Brahman, and there is nothing more than this Brahman. Brahman is the most exalted. So that is the vision. The vision is, you are Brahman. You are the whole. Everything that you experience, internally, externally, up and down, right, left, in front of you, in back of you, all of the nama-rupas, names and forms, everything that comes into your experience, all of this is Brahman alone. How to recognize that? How to recognize it? You have to see through the superimposition. You have to, because it's the recognition is what we call aparoksha. It's a direct, immediate recognition. But it takes viveka. You know, it takes viveka. So that you need to be, what you need to be able to do is discriminate in this experience that you're having right now. Right? Because here we are. We have the experience right here. You need to be able to discriminate the conscious being, the sat, what we call the sat-chit, in this experience. The satyam in the experience that we're having right now, the truth, that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. That's called satyam. So what is the satyam in this experience? It's the sat-chit. It's the conscious being that I am, the non-objectifiable conscious being, right? Which exists, the existent conscious being that is me, right? That is present to every vritti, every thought that I have. So you have really, we are thorough here, you have sat-chit-ananda. You have the amness, which is non-objectifiable. We say, I am, you are, it is. But amness is the only experience we have. We don't have an experience of isness. The experience is of amness. There's not am-is-are. There's no such thing. There's only the experience of being, which is my being, which is me. That's the experience of amness. See, I should be able to say, you know, the wall am and the rug am. The space am. There is no is. There's only the self-evident experience of my own amness. That's satyam. That never goes. It never wavers at all. So I need to be able to differentiate my amness, this being, from all of the nama-rupa, the names and forms that I experience, that are changing all the time. So there's something that is here, the existence that I give to everything that never changes, and then the names and forms that are always changing. Right? Then I have to look, okay, the chit, the consciousness, that's satyam. Satyam means it never varies. Consciousness never varies. The objects of consciousness continually vary. Right? So that which, the luminary, the ultimate luminary that is not objectifiable, that doesn't vary. It's not doing anything. It just simply, by its nature, me, is known. It's self-evident, self-shining. That's the sat-chit. And what is the nature of that sat-chit? We say, what is the affect of it? We say ananda, not bliss, as a bliss that comes and goes in the mind, but the ananda, the wholeness, or the fullness, which is the very nature of my being. That sat-chit ananda, that's the satyam. That's the thing that's the invariable. You can never modify it, change it, get rid of it in any way. But this presence, me, and so we say sat-chit-ananda. What are those words pointing to? Is the me yourself, the existent being that you are, that is what the words are pointing to. And you have to make it personal, this personal me that I take to be myself right now. You have to differentiate this me from all of your changing experiences and recognize, wow, that's right. This never changes. It's never away from any experience. There's never anything, I can't do anything about it. I can't change it. I can't cover it. It is the very essence of all experience. So you have to say, I am the very essence of all experience. I am the very being of all experience. And I have to recognize the fact of it. It's not some intellectual mumbo-jumbo to kind of write down as a catechism. It's a reality that I need to recognize. There's the Satchit that I am, the Satchit Ananda, that wholeness, stable being that I am. That's the Satyam. And everything else is Mithya. Nama-rupa, the names and forms, all of these things have Satchit superimposed on them. Right? But these things in this creation, they don't have any Satchit. Right? Because they come and go. Consciousness doesn't come and go. Being doesn't come and go. So these things take place. These things take place in Satchit, but they don't have Satchit themselves. It's kind of like if you think of the rope snake example. The rope is Satchit. The snake is Mithya. The snake is the Nama Rupa. There is no... The snake is totally dependent on the rope for its being. But from the standpoint of the rope, the very experience, the reality of the snake is only the rope. But the rope hasn't become the snake. It's the truth of the snake. It hasn't become the snake. See that? I haven't become this creation. I haven't changed into this creation. I'm the changeless being of this creation. That's why the rope snake is so important. I'm the changeless being, the very, very stuff of this creation. But I haven't objectified into it. I haven't objectified into the creation. Myself is not something that I can objectify or look at. But there is nothing that is not enjoying me for its reality. Because my being is the very being of all of this. So that's why in this verse in the Bhasha, the Bhasha here, there's a Shankara's Bhasha, and also there's a Bhasha on the Bhasha. You know? Swamiji quotes, that's why I say his book is so wonderful. Not only does he unfold this, he quotes all of these Bhasha, the Bhasha on the Bhasha, it's all in his book also. He says, in this verse, it says, Brahman alone is this universe. And if that's like saying, this is what he uses, it says in the Bhasha. If you're walking along at night and you mistake a post for a ghost, and that you feel all that fear, you've seen a ghost, right? Then somebody comes along and says, that ghost is a post. The ghost is a post, right? And then you see the clue of the ghost to the reality of the ghost, which is only a post. That's what we have here. This entire universe is Brahman. Right? You have to see through this universe to what it actually is. And what it actually is yourself. But what is yourself? Not that this body is part of the universe. Your sense organs, part of the universe. Your mind, part of the universe. The ahankara, the I notion, part of the universe. Your emotions, part of the universe. Right? They're part of mithya. They're part of they come and go. They're illumined. They're not luminaries. They're ultimately illumined. But what is the self of all of these things? That is Brahman. So when they say this whole universe is Brahman, it's what they mean exactly. This post, this ghost that you're seeing, it's a post. This universe that you're seeing is yourself. This body that you're seeing is yourself. The sense organs you're seeing is yourself. The mind that you're seeing is yourself. The universe that you're seeing is yourself. The very being that this, what does it mean? The very being, the substance of all of this, is only one. It's only one non-objectifiable, essential being, which is me. Now we have to bring it back to, what is the me experience? Not as an object. I don't say, oh, look at me. Or look at this experience of me that I'm having. The me experience is non-objectifiable. There's no subject-object relationship. It is just simply me. That's why meditation is so good. Meditation, you just pull away from all of this commotion, all of the commotion, and just be with what is left. Not looking for an experience, but just being with the one who has is always there for every experience. If you're looking for an experience, then you're going into subtle realms of mental realms or experiential realms. Those have their own value, but they're not you. You're already here. And so in meditation, you just slow down everything so that you can just be with you, the one that is never not here, so that you can recognize, I'm never not here. Right now, at this moment, I am absolutely 100% totally present. I can't be more present. I can't have more of a self-experience that I'm having right now. And that's true for each of us. It's not that, oh, well, she's learned this and she's having a special experience that I have to evolve into. No. If there's no difference at all. There's only one self-experience, and that self-experience belongs to the self. And that self-experience is totally present at this moment for everybody, totally. Your mind, here we are, 10 people in the room. One person, their mind could be agitated. Another person's mind could be quiet. Another person's mind could be depressed. Another person's mind could be happy. Another person's mind could be daydreaming. All of this, every mind can be doing all these different things. And for each one, from the standpoint of the upadhi, the self-experience that is present amidst whatever quality of mind is totally 100% experientially present, not covered in any way at all. Whether it's the hellish mind or the happy mind, the self-experience is as present. It is not being diluted or taken away by the negative experience or the positive experience. Of course, we like the positive experience in the mind, you know. We don't like the body to be in pain. We don't like the mind to be in pain. That's fine. But that's not the point. The point is, we think that we need to have a mental experience to appreciate fully, wholly my being. When my being, the being, the me that I am, is not an objectifiable object. I'm not big or I'm not small. I'm not happy or sad. I'm the very being that is present, non-objectifiably the very truth of all of these experiences, and I am my own experience. The me experience belongs to me, not to the mind. So it's like saying, you know, the sun needs a clear day in order to experience itself. Get rid of the clouds. We have to get rid of all the clouds, get rid of all of the rain, get rid of the wind, get rid of everything so the sun can have a full experience of itself. Yeah? The sun doesn't care at all. It can be a storm, a raging storm. Or it can be a cloudless day. The sun experience is the sun experience. It is absolutely irrelevant. Now, the truth of it all is that's why for moksha is not, once I know myself, I'm not dependent on the mind to serve me, you know, to make me enlightened. Once the ignorance is gone and I know myself, that's it. There is a secondary gain that's quite important because, you know, I would prefer to have a healthy body and I prefer to have a quiet, peaceful mind. But when the mind knows myself, when it's gained knowledge, the suffering that the mind had is gone. So that's a secondary gain. Because it doesn't need to do this and do that. It's not threatened anymore. It's not threatened. It doesn't need to accomplish something in order to have ananda, to have fullness, because the source of fullness is my own being, reflected in it. So it recognizes this. It recognizes that my being is never coming and going, that I'm amritam, immortal, free from time. I'll never go anywhere. It recognizes itself can never get away from me either. Wherever it goes, I am. So there's nothing that it has nothing to worry about. Its problems are solved. And so the mind settles down. And it enjoys its own level of shanti, its own level of peace. But that peace is secondary to moksha. The moksha is a recognition of myself, which is whole and complete and free and changeless and is the very being of all. It's a recognition I'm the whole. Right? And in that recognition, the mind settles down. And that's a nice thing. That's a nice thing. It's not causing pain. But even if it does cause pain, it doesn't matter because I'm there. Right? Myself is not in pain. So these are subtle points, but they're very... very important to really understanding this, because we are always seeking outside of ourselves for something. What stops us from recognizing the simplicity of my own presence, the simplicity and immediacy of myself. You know. Okay, let's stop there. Just take a minute. Om Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.